Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, it is a special conversation here on the Announcer Schedules podcast. I'm TJ Reeves, hanging here with Phil DeMont Mullen, and it is our pleasure to welcome in. She was right off the call in the women's NCAA tournament of the Miami upset over Indiana in Bloomington earlier this week on the ESPN family of networks. But Brenda Van Lingen is right here, right now on the Announcer Schedules podcast. I guess the first thing is, it's been a couple of days. Has it sunk in that you called and we watched what you called and what we watched with Miami pulling that upset against the number one seed? Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this. Yeah, I guess it sunk in. I mean, I've gone back and watched most of the game again and just thought about it and how exciting that it was on all the network morning shows, the finish of our game. It was just an incredible game. The effort by Miami was incredible, and Indiana had so many chances. It's just amazing to go back and look at what happened.
Phil and I both love diving into this part, and I do a lot of play-by-play. At what point are you grasping Miami can maybe do this? And then you've got a crazy sequence at the end of the game where Miami scores for the lead and Indiana doesn't have a timeout. Take us through the process of Miami could do this, Miami may be about to do this, and you're having to call it while it happens on the fly.
Yeah, it was such an interesting game because in the first round, Miami had not played well in the first half and came through and outscored Oklahoma State in the second half to win the game. And so I talked about that a lot on the first part of the Indiana game because they got a great start against Indiana and they really had the Hoosiers on their heels the whole game. And the whole time I felt like Indiana was going to come back at any time. And then they made that run in the third quarter, but they never could in the third quarter tie it, and they never went ahead. And so early in the fourth quarter, I actually wrote down what I wanted to say at the end of the game if Miami would pull off the upset, because I find that helps me make sure I'm focused and say what I want to say. So I had written it down with about what at one of the early media timeouts in the fourth quarter, just in case. And then I kept bringing it up in the broadcast that Indiana still hasn't pulled ahead. Now, they tied it. They couldn't hit a free throw to go ahead. And then they were down one several times and never could take the lead. So I know that's such a mental part of the game. And I feel like Indiana just was struggling. But then, in answer to your question, when Indiana ties it with the big three, and then they had an opportunity to go ahead after the missed free throws, and then they miss it. And then the free throws by Miami. I mean, there were so many things that happened in the last minute of that game. It was crazy. And then Garzón hits the step back three to tie it with 6.6 seconds remaining. And you're thinking we could go to overtime, but that's still a lot of time for Miami. And will Indiana get a stop? And so Miami inbounds it. The scorer, Harden, scores it in the paint. I look at the clock. It's 3.3 seconds remaining. Earlier this year, I had a game where Vandy came all the way back against Arkansas, and Vandy tied it. And with almost the exact same amount of time, Arkansas drove down the court and banked in a three and won the game. So it was almost the exact scenario that I had earlier. I looked, I reminded that there were no timeouts left for Indiana, followed Moore McNeil down the court, looked like she had a path on the right side. She went on the left, the ball was stolen away, and the upset happened. Another number one went down in the second round, and Miami pulled off the upset. So it was just a remarkable set of sequences in the last really 30 seconds or so of that game.
Yeah, and Brenda, you mentioned writing yourself that note during one of the breaks. You know, your analyst alongside you, Holly Warlick, and then, you know, of course, you're in communication with the truck and the producer and so forth. You know, can you take us even further as far as perhaps during the breaks and these moments where you guys can game plan a bit, what that was like those last few minutes?
Yeah, let me think through a little bit. I, you know, we're trying to make sure that all the storylines are covered, that we've hit everything. You know, I don't know if we even really talked about specifically what if Miami wins this game. We kind of set aside a couple of things that we were thinking about doing because the game was too good. You know, the Cavender twins have this incredible social media presence. And we were going to do kind of a fun spoof on that they, you know, that Holly and I on our social media presence were gaining on them. You know, we have 824 between us and Holly has one and I have 823. We're going to do something fun with that. But we didn't do that because the game was too good. And you know, we talked more about those things and just the actual statistics that were happening. And I just mentioned, you know, Holly and I were talking about the fact that it's such a mental thing that if a team comes back and can't take the lead, it just gets harder and harder throughout the game. So I think that's mainly what we discussed in the breaks.
And Brenda, if we can take it to, you know, more big picture, in full disclosure, I'm a Miami guy all the way around. Like I grew up a Miami fan. I got to work in the sports information office in the late 90s, actually was the women's basketball contact for a year with Coach Fern Labadie, if you remember her.
I do.
And, you know, when I think about women's basketball and when I was kind of working with it closely back then, the sport has grown so much. In so many ways, as far as, you know, the attention it gets, the resources it gets and so forth. And I'm sure we can tackle that from a, you know, a big picture level. But what I'd like to ask you is, as a broadcaster, the resources, you know, compared to when you started in television covering women's basketball and sort of, you know, maybe it was an afterthought of sorts back then for a lot of folks, but what it's become today and the resources that are coming your way, I know we're not completely there yet, but we've come a long way.
Yeah, it's so exciting. The very first year that I called an NCAA tournament game was in 1996. It was my first year out of coaching, and I had done three games for Nebraska Public Television. That's how I got my start. And that was the year before the Big 12 was formed. And so Texas was placed in Lawrence, Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse. The first round games were not televised, but ESPN reached out to Kansas and said, if Texas and Kansas both advanced to the second round, could you have a local production crew broadcast the game and we'll cut in from the national feed? And so that's how I got on my first NCAA tournament broadcast. Was Texas and Kansas did both advance. We did I think it was called ESPN Regional at the time, did a ESPN Regional broadcast of the game. And near the end of the game, Robin Roberts was still in the studio and she cut out to the site. And I made my national appearance on the NCAA tournament on my fourth game that I ever broadcast.
Wow.
You know, but I was only on nationally for probably like 5 minutes, but it was a really good game itself. So over the years,
we got to stop you on that. You got to have a moment reflecting on that going, is this really happening? That's Robin Roberts from ESPN throwing this to me to call the game. When you reflect on that, reflect a little more.
I mean, I was so nervous and juiced, and I remember my heart just pounding in my chest, and it was such a cool thing. At the time, we couldn't hear the throw, but we knew they were throwing. The funny thing about that, the other story is, she mispronounced my name because, you know, for whatever reason, she didn't get the right pronunciation. And all my friends laughed at me and joked with me afterwards because she introduced us and say, hey, we're going out to Allen Fieldhouse, a great game between Texas and Kansas, Dave Armstrong and Brenda Von Longen. And so for a long time, so a lot of my friends called me Brenda Von Longen because that's how I got introduced on my first my first toss in the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, but it was amazing. And I know I was speaking 100 miles a minute in that game. Just I was the analyst And, you know, Dave Armstrong was a pro. And so I was like jumping in, trying to say all this stuff. I know I was kind of crazy, excited and nervous in that game. But over the years, you know, they didn't start broadcasting the first round games for quite a while. I think when I got back and did some games in 99, 2000, 2001, we just did second round games at that point. And then there were a few years where they moved 8 teams to a site in the first and second rounds. And so you had to prepare for 8 teams and all those games at one site. And then, you know, when we finally a few years ago got all of the games televised. So a few, you know, then the evolution was a few were streamed and then ultimately, or they cut in, they televised them at the same time, but you didn't see nationally all the games. You just saw cut-ins, or if you were in your regional area, you saw it, right? That was kind of that next evolution. And then now, finally, the last couple of years, all of the games are on national television. So, you know, that's been terrific to see. Good producers. They still do some Remy productions, which means the producers aren't on site, and that always causes some challenges. But it's certainly grown a lot in all the years. It's my 28th year of broadcasting.
Wow. I don't know that Phil knows this, but watch this, Brenda. Young TJ was the student play-by-play person at then Memphis State. Phil, I don't know that you and I have talked about this at any point off the air, much less on announcer schedules, podcast, etc. So I was the radio guy, and you may remember this name, Brenda. Mary Lou Johns was the longtime Memphis State coach, a 500-game winner at Memphis State, and Phil's nodding along too. So I cut my teeth in the women's game 30 plus years ago as well, around the time of your playing career, and it has come light years forward in terms of interest, in terms of technology. Another thing that Phil and I think the audience will be interested in, you mentioned being an analyst and your background of being a player and being a coach. You've now transitioned to being a play-by-play person. That's not the easiest thing to do. How have you found that? How much more comfortable have you gotten? What's the difference in the role? Enlighten us some on that.
Yeah, and I still do both. I probably did about 30 games play-by-play this year and about 15 as an analyst. So, in the course of the same year, depends on what network I'm working for, what role I play. So I was an analyst out of my coaching career for the first probably 15 years or so, and love breaking down the X's and O's, describing the stories, elevating women's sports, just absolutely loved it. And then I was asked by several different networks what I consider doing play-by-play. And at first I was like, no way. No way. I don't have training on that. Not really comfortable. And I did a few smaller tournaments, like an island tournament where I did both. So it kind of gave me the chance to do play-by-play and analyst combined. And so then I started around 2008 or 9 or 10, somewhere in there. And I started doing play-by-play for Fox Sports because I was on the Big 12 package, but they wanted to get me more games. And they said, we can get you more games if you're the play-by-play announcer. So, I mean, I really learned on the fly. And I remember the first game, it was Cal and Texas A&M, not two small teams, not two small universities. And that was my first national play-by-play. And the ball goes up and I'm like, oh, wait, I think I'm supposed to be talking now. And so it took me time. And after 3 years, Fox Sports said, you know what, we'd rather have you go back to being the analyst. And at the same time, ESPN said, oh, you do play-by-play? And so at that time, I shifted. That was about 10 years ago. And so since then, I've done an all play-by-play for ESPN, and any other, whether it's Fox Sports or Big Ten Network or any third-tier games, I'm the analyst. And so they're very different. The preparation's different. I always say my brain has to think completely differently when I'm in each role. When I'm the analyst, I can sit back, observe, watch things develop, predict how they're going to develop, break down the X's and O's. As a former player and coach, I love it. I also say being a play-by-play announcer for me is work. Being an analyst is fun. So play-by-play, you have to be on top of things. You have to know the score, the fouls, the situation, the setup. You say what is happening describe, you describe what is happening, and the analyst describes the how and the why. And so it's a completely different mindset. And honestly, it's been a real challenge for me over the years. And I feel like in the last few years, I'm just kind of coming into my own as a play-by-play announcer. I'm not a traditional play-by-play announcer. I don't think I sound like any play-by-play announcers out there that are like classically trained in it. I'm a former analyst and coach that's now a play-by-play, and I try to bring those strengths to my role, and not be an analyst, but try to set up my analyst in ways that I know will be helpful to them. I've been assigned a lot of rookies to work with in the broadcasting field. I've worked with Candace Parker in one of her very first games on TV, Asia Wilson, who, you know, won with the Aces in the WNBA. I did one of her first games. Andrea Carter, who is now a big star for ESPN. I was with her on her very first games. Holly Warlick, who's just out of coaching and has never done broadcasting. So I've broken in a lot of people into the broadcast field, and being play-by-play has allowed me to work with some incredible talent in this field.
The conversation shall continue in a couple of moments. First, let's tell you about our friends at BetUS who want to give you, yes, you, a $50 free bet this weekend for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight by using their online service. They're America's favorite sports book, and you want to take advantage of this offer. Get a free bet with our promo code BRACKET23. BRACKET23 gets you a free $50 bet for the NCAA tournament. You can really use it on anything you want, but why would you not use it on March Madness with all these Sweet 16 games, whether it's Alabama and San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, Tennessee, Xavier, Texas, Gonzaga, UCLA, UConn, Arkansas, on and on. A free $50 bet awaits you at BetUS. They've got outstanding coverage of all of the sports. They've been America's favorite sports book for going on 30 years. You bet, you win, you get paid with BetUS. Free bet awaits you. Use our promo code BRACKET23 for that free bet. BRACKET23 gets you a free $50 bet for the March Madness coverage with BetUS.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Awesome stuff. Really commend you, Brenda, for stepping into that play-by-play role as well. You know, you mentioned Dave Armstrong. When you think back to the partners that you worked with, the play-by-players you worked with when you were an analyst over the years, are there some that come to mind as far as you sort of taking some maybe tips of the trade from them, or, you know, kind of saying, hey, I remember when such and such, you know, and how he prepared or how she prepared and approached the game?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking that. Yes, Dave Armstrong was one of my first in that setting. Kevin Kugler, who a lot of people know, he and I got our starts basically together at Nebraska Public Television. So it's so fun to see what he's done. Bill Dolman also back at Nebraska Public Television. But when I got onto the Fox Sports package, Bill Land, who now does all the games for the San Antonio Spurs and was a legend really in television, I learned so much from Bill because I was the rookie working with him, and he really guided me, helping me set up the games. And I always noticed how when I would say something, he would back me up with stats, or he would bookend it with things that kind of didn't just leave my comment hanging in the air, but he would kind of close, you know, bookend it. And I just was always appreciative of that. And that was something that I always had in mind. I work with Kevin Eschenfelder, who also does Houston Astros games. And then most recently with Ron Thulin, who he and I worked together for 10 years on Fox Sports. And he's the best. I just love Ron to death. His preparation is unequaled. As far as he prepares for games and how he sets up his analyst. And he just is a tremendous talent and a great friend. And I really miss working with him. And, you know, right after the Big 12 championship ended and I called the Iowa State Big 12 championship title game, he was the first one to text me and said, "You nailed it. You did a great job." And I miss working with him. I learned so much from him, and he's still working hard at it. And thank you for asking me. I've worked with a lot of really good play-by-play guys.
This has been fantastic stuff, Brenda. We love getting to know more about broadcasters, their stories. Again, you're a former star player. You've been an administrator. Now you're in the role as an analyst. And again, I say to the audience, people think the play-by-play part of it is easy, and Brenda's nodding along, until you start trying to grasp what all you have to grasp to call a game on television, much less call it on radio where they allegedly can't see what's going on and you're having to call it. So bravo to you. Bravo for the job that you did the other night. And the drama continues now this weekend with the women's tournament, right? Turn it up another notch or two, because they've had fantastic finishes over and over again in the Final Four and championship games. Why do I get the feeling we're going to get much of the same Elite Eight, Final Four title game, right? Get ready.
I think so. I mean, two number one seeds have already been eliminated. So I think there's a lot of parity in the game. I definitely think it's South Carolina's to lose at this point. But, you know, they've had a lot of teams that have pushed them, at least in the first halves, and they have to shoot well and wear teams down with their depth and their great variety, diversity of talents. So I think it's theirs to lose. But I think there's still some big games and big moments and finishes to come up.
And Brenda, what's coming up next for you personally? You know, of course, an off season, I'm sure there's chances to recharge the batteries, hopefully. But, you know, tell us what's on deck for you.
Well, I have been working on a documentary series for the last couple of years called If Not For Them. And it's the story of those that built the foundation for college women's basketball. If not for them, we would not have what we do today. And so over the last couple of years, I've raised money to conduct over 100 interviews across the country, interviewing women that played and coached and were administrators in the 50s, 60s, and 70s before the NCAA took over, and those that had to battle the early battles of Title IX. And after I completed those interviews last fall, I started putting together a preview of each of the 10 episodes, and we're going to showcase it at the Final Four this year, March 30th in Dallas, at a private viewing. But anybody that's a contributor that goes to ifnotforthem.com and makes a contribution is invited. But we're going to show a preview of each of the 10 episodes. Each of the 10 episodes of that, and then try to get a funder for the rest of the project. And I'm really proud of it, and I'm really excited about it. So if you get a chance, check out ifnotforthem.com, because it's an amazing effort to preserve and share the history of women's basketball, the hidden figures of women's basketball that many people don't know about, have never heard of, or have forgotten. And it's a great project. So thanks for asking.
Love it. Great stuff. Phil, we've enjoyed this with Brenda Van Lingen. Tremendous here on the Announcer Schedules podcast. Anything else in closing, Phil, here for Brenda?
No, I think it's just fantastic to have you on. I mean, it's really fascinating moving from that analyst to play-by-play role. So thank you for, you know, bringing us behind the curtain there a bit. And hey, what a game you got to call. This Indiana-Miami classic. You know, that's one that be remembered for a long, long time in the women's college basketball ranks.
Yeah, I'm really thankful to have the opportunities that I do. And, you know, it just amazes me sometimes that I've done this for 28 years now, and I get the best seat in the house to tell the stories of these young women and describe what's happening on the court and just to share it and elevate women's basketball. And I appreciate being on your show today to be able to talk about it a little bit. So thanks so much.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.